Is the Antichrist on his way? That's what we're going to talk about next hour with our special guest, Gary Wayne, on Coast to Coast AM. So make sure you're part of the program. Fascinating story indeed. When we come back in a moment, your phone calls, your stories, your questions with Robert Felix, author of Not by Fire, But by Ice. We're back with Robert Felix, Not by Fire, But by Ice, as we talk about magnetic reversals, the glaciers, and, of course, an imminent ice age as well. And we'll get to your phone calls, too. Robert, if you were in a room with a bunch of climatologists, you would tell them the same thing. What do you think their reaction would be?
Oh, some of them would agree with me, and some of them would disagree with me. Quite a few scientists are saying now that, and they're not necessarily climatologists, but several scientists are now saying that we are headed into an ice age. I think of Piers Corbin. He is an astrophysicist out of London, and I was lucky enough to meet with him when I was in London a few years ago, and he says, based on his study of the sun, that we are now in a little ice age. Another one who says that is Dr. Habibullah Abdusamatov. It took me a while to learn how to
spell that name. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. But anyway, Dr. Abdusamatov, he is an astrophysicist, and he's not just your, quote, ordinary astrophysicist. He is from Russia, and he happens to also be head of the Russian portion of the International Space Station. So this guy's credible. He was saying, I was lucky enough to be at a talk he was giving in Chicago in, I think it was 2012, but he was warning at that time that we would be entering a little ice age by the year 2014. And now he also says we're in a little ice age. So at least there's some scientists out there that absolutely do agree. They don't necessarily say we're going into a full-fledged ice age, but, you know, a little ice age is enough for me. You know, during the last little ice age, millions, literally millions of people died of starvation. So
yeah,
so even a quote little ice age is very scary.
What did you see to get this theory going many years ago? What did you see?
You know, I am still trying to understand that myself. Back in 1991, I was taking a writing course. I'd gotten a divorce, and I was kind of at odds with myself, and I was taking painting courses and various things, which I turned out not enjoying, but I took this writing course and enjoyed it.
But you sold the painting for $10 million, I hear.
Yeah, right. I'd like that. Yeah, I wouldn't be doing this, would I? But
I bet you would. You'd still do it.
I think I would. Yeah, I am enjoying this. But I wrote a short article, just fiction, saying that an asteroid killed the dinosaurs. And then I thought, gee, I think I ought to go look and see what actually did kill them. And I went to the library and looked it up, and they said, oh, an asteroid killed the dinosaurs. So, oh, okay, well, I'll make this into nonfiction, and I'll write it. Another article. But the more I researched for that, the more I said, no, I think a magnetic reversal did it. So I'm kind of at odds with all of the people who say that an asteroid killed the dinosaurs. I think it was an ice age and the magnetic reversal. The two things put together is an ice age and a magnetic reversal. One of the reasons I say an ice age that no one has really addressed is right at the dinosaur extinction, sea levels declined by 1/5 of a mile. Now, to my way of thinking, there's only one explanation for sea level decline, is that had to have been practically a snowball Earth. So anyway, I don't know if that's a good enough explanation, but I really don't know. But once I started, I just felt driven to do it. And I'm an INTJ. I don't know if anybody's familiar with the Myers-Briggs test, but INTJs love to find out something that nobody else has. So it really became a passion for me.
Okay, let's go to the phones now. We'll go to Spencer in Atlanta, Georgia to start. Hi, Spencer. Go ahead.
Good evening, George.
Hey there.
Good evening to Mr. Felix. I live in Atlanta, and we have about 2 inches of snow on the ground right now.
Okay.
In recent times, that's kind of a rare occasion, but we celebrate the snow because we get it so very and often. But I like to ask Mr. Felix, I stay in an area where there are huge boulders that, from what I could discover, was rolled down by the glaciers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're completely out of ground. One is so big, they named the street after it. They call it Boat Rock. Okay. It's about as big as a boat. It's a huge boulder of granite, I think it is. And I just wondered what information you might have.
Glaciers have been known to do that, Robert.
Yes, it's called a glacial erratus. I used to live, I was born and raised in Vermont, and we had lots of glacial erratuses there, is that they were carried there by the ice. Now, I didn't realize that the ice went as far south as Atlanta. You're seeing these glacial erratus in the Atlantic, in Atlanta area?
Boulders here in the southwest part of Atlanta.
Wow. No, I did not know the ice went that far south. One of the things I say in my book is that during an ice age, that the climate of Chicago moves to Georgia. But I am not aware that the ice ever went as far south as Georgia, but I could be wrong.
You know, Edgar Cayce had his view and vision of a new North America constructed with you know, different coastlines and everything else. Might that fit what you're talking about, Robert?
Well, there have been different coastlines. During the dinosaur extinction, there was an inland sea that it went up between the essentially between the Rockies and the Appalachians. So there were a lot of, like, you know, and that inland sea extended all the way up to up into Canada. I went several years ago. I went to a museum, and I'm trying to think of the name. Drumheller, a museum. It's a paleontological museum in Drumheller, Alberta. And actually, the inland sea during the time of the dinosaurs went all the way up there. So, yeah, sea levels. You know, it depends on the glaciers and how much of that water is locked up on land, and plus the land does dance up and down over the millions of years.
We will go to Rick in Phoenix, Arizona now. Welcome to the show. Hi, Rick.
Yes, thank you, George. I'm sure your guest knows about a subtle relationship between the strength of our magnetic field on the Earth, the magnetosphere, and the amount of cosmic rays that strike us. And one of the big factors that mediates how many cosmic rays hit our atmosphere is the strength of that magnetic field. And as your guest mentioned, I'm terrible with names, excuse me.
Robert.
As your guest Robert mentioned,
the
movement of the poles is also correlated with the strength of the field. And the strength of the field, one of the factors, not only the wobble of our axis, but it's the amount of solar flares, or CMEs, coronal mass ejections, that strike the atmosphere. And that's determined by the strength of the magnetic field, which protects us from these CMEs. And the less, or I should say, the more cosmic rays that can get through the magnetic sphere around our Earth, the bigger the cloud cover, because they condense the moisture in the atmosphere, create more cloud cover, and that makes the Earth colder. Is that one of the mechanisms that we're talking about here?
I absolutely agree with you, yes. And because our magnetic field strength is declining, then the amount of cosmic rays coming into our through the magnetosphere is increasing, and those cosmic rays bring with them little tiny particles, and you know, the moisture can connect, you know, they're infinitesimal size, but moisture can collect around those and end up increasing snowfall too.
Next
so,
up,
yes, you're absolutely right.
We go to Tom in Port Angeles, Washington. Welcome to the show. Hi, Tom.
Hello, George. Hello, Robert.
Hi there.
Yeah, there's something that's connected. There's a story that's connected to all this, and it never gets any coverage because it would make things even more complex than it already is. And it's called glacial rebound. Have you heard about it?
Yes, when the glaciers melt, well, then the land rises.
You bet. And it goes all the way through the crust into the lithosphere, and the lithosphere is still actually rising up. I remember seeing it on the television back in the 90s and how they did it with lasers across Lake Superior or something up there. And you could do a whole show on that, George, because that's something that's being left out. That's not part of the conversation, and it has to be, if not instrumental, a big influence on how we're analyzing this global warming thing.
Robert, a lot of people, and thank you, I appreciate that, a lot of people confuse global warming with pollution. Two different things.
Yes, two different things. Yeah, I don't like pollution.
Nobody
I
does.
Like, no, I absolutely do not like pollution. I live in a beautiful part of the country, and I love it. But global warming and pollution are two totally different things. Plus, carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. You know, that's what they're blaming on any warming. But carbon dioxide is a odorless gas that is actually a plant food. Right now, carbon dioxide levels are about the lowest they've been in something like 600 million years. I've got a little chart, a graph on the side of the front page of my website that shows you that during the last 600 million years, temperatures have been much warmer than today. And sometimes the CO2 levels were higher, sometimes the CO2 levels were lower, but CO2 is not a pollutant. It is a plant food. I think that we've just been so far led astray to be told that it is a pollutant.
Is it conceivable during the last ice age we had humans on the planet? I think it's possible.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I think so, yeah, because the last ice age was just, it was the Younger Dryas. That was just 11,500 years ago, and there were humans. As near as I can tell, our kind of human has been around for like 300,000 years. So we've made it through a lot of ice ages, absolutely. Not many of us, but a lot of us have made it.
Let's go to Joe in Long Island, New York, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, Robert, a couple of questions. What was on the book as you researched it? Did you go to Greenland or the North Pole? And then, you know, it's noticeable people say storms are definitely at times more sudden and maybe more violent, local storms. And also with the animals, such as the behavior of birds migrating, say, from Glacier Park, Montana to South America, or dolphins showing up someplace else, isn't that an indicator of changes in the environment?
Well, each time I see something like that happen, like a few years ago, the snowy owls were moving south. But I'm not sure. I don't think we have enough data there to say that for sure. Of course, whenever I see something like that happen, I jump up and down and say, yeah, that's more proof. But then I end up finding out that not necessarily. So certainly if we see animals starting to move south, I would think that they would probably know something. You know, I was back in Vermont a few years back, and I discovered that moose, when I was growing up in Vermont, there were no moose in Vermont. And then I went back 20 years later, and I found out that moose were coming back to Vermont like crazy. I think there have been more than 1,000 moose killed just in automobile collisions. So they're definitely back. And I thought, oh boy, the moose are moving south because of the weather. But what it turned out is that in the 1800s, Vermont, the farmers cleared an awful lot of the land in order to grow sheep. And now that they're not growing sheep there, why the woods are coming back, and that's why the moose are coming back. So I guess it depends on which animal it is, I jump on it each time, and then I often find out there's another reason for it.
Robert, what are they teaching in the schools these days about this stuff?
Oh, as far as I can tell, they're still teaching that humans are causing global warming. And I think that is an absolute shame. I'm sorry that the teachers aren't, you know, giving both sides of the story.
Next up, we go to Juliana in Los Angeles, California. Hi there, Juliana.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, thanks for calling.
The show is great. I wanted to ask Robert, the chemtrails that they're doing, and I noticed that they're doing them every single day now, all day long. Does that have anything to do with what's happening with the sun and the conversation we're having right now?
You're probably not going to like my answer, but I don't think so. I look at those mainly, and I may be wrong, but I look at those mainly as contrails. I just look at those as water vapor that's showing up. So, and I haven't really done any research. That's just a gut feeling that it's not related.
You know, when we were flying this weekend from Denver to LAX after doing our Beyond Belief TV shows, there were two planes on our right side spraying, Robert, clearly spraying something. It was weird. I've never seen anything that close, that direct before. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, I don't either. I just, that's way out of my area of expertise. I just...
Not your pay grade, is it?
I personally, I'm not worried about it, but maybe I should be.
Something's going on. I mean, there's no question about that. How did an architect get interested in weather predictions?
You know, I'm not trying to predict the weather. It's more the climate. But I don't know. You know, I had mentioned earlier when we were talking that I'm an INTJ on the Myers-Briggs test, which I guess we're just the kind of people who are driven to find new things when we can. It just... Once I started researching it, I spent 8.5 years full time, no pay, is I would go to the University of Washington Library of Natural Sciences and just sit there and research and research and research. And sometimes it felt almost as if the right magazine would just fall off the shelf into my hands. It's weird. I don't normally think that way, but it was weird how things would just show up for me, and so it just kept pulling me more and more into it.
You have a guardian angel that wants you to get some answers out of this, huh?
Something I don't know. I honest to gosh don't know. It didn't make sense at the time. I was lucky. I don't know if you're lucky or not, but at the time I was not married, but had a divorce. But I think if I'd been married, my wife would have probably left, you know, because 8.5 years with no income is an awful long time.
Would I have interviewed you back in 97 in St. Louis on my Nighthawk show? I remember that, yeah.
You interviewed me. You were just filling in part-time at that time.
But had my local show in St. Louis.
Yeah, and I did not know that. I was just calling radio stations around the country, and I called your station. And I think you interviewed me for an hour, and you said, Robert, I'll have to have you on Coast to Coast.
Yep, I remember that.
That's when I learned that you were on Coast to Coast, yes.
That's probably when I learned it, too. Robert, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, our first luncheon series of this year gets underway Feb 13th here in Los Angeles with Dr. Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky. So come on out, have a great lunch, and meet Dr. Sky and talk space and astronomy. Send an email to lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com. It's that simple. Include your phone number, lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com. Welcome back to Coast, our final segment here with Robert Felix and your phone calls as well. Robert, do you get asked to attend special functions on climate change or anything like that?
Actually, no. I would say probably because I'm not connected with any university.
Right.
And because I'm going against the grain. So, no, I do not get asked to attend any of those functions.
What was your reaction to your book when it came out, the first one, Not by Fire but by Ice?
Oh, the reaction has been great. I started the website then in 1997. And since 1997, I was looking today, I've had more than 35 million hits on the website.
That's so amazing.
So I'm getting, I get a lot of hits at night, but a lot of other countries where I've got followers. I know a lot in the United Kingdom and in Australia, and the book has been translated and published in Italy, and a French publisher has bought the rights to it. They haven't translated it yet. So I'm getting attention at least around the world, not just the United States.
I'll always remember the cover of the book. It looks like a big city, probably Chicago, though you won't say. Buried in ice.
Well, I had somebody that lived, a geologist from New York, who thought it was New York City, and he said this is wrong, Robert, because the ice was five times thicker in New York City than your book shows. So yes, they are. It came all the way to Long Island, and that's the actual glacial detritus that fell off the end of the glacier is what created Long Island. So it's you know, there was one thing I wanted to mention here that we haven't had a chance. You know, I had talked about magnetic underwater volcanoes.
Yes, slow cooking,
feeding the seas.
Yeah.
Well, there was an eruption in 2012, and maybe you'll remember this. But airplanes flying over, I looked down on the ocean, and they could see a raft of floating pumice.
Was this near Iceland?
No, this was actually north of New Zealand.
Okay.
And it was called the Havre Seamount. But anyway, they assumed that there had been an underwater volcanic eruption. The ice raft, it was pumice about 20 feet thick, and it covered an area of 10,000 square miles. We're talking
wow.
an area as big as the state of Vermont. But they didn't know how big it was until just 2 weeks ago the paper was released, and they now realize that was the biggest volcanic eruption in recorded history, and we didn't even know it. And that's why I say that so many underwater volcanoes are probably going off right now, heating the seas. And I mean, if this was the biggest one in history and it took 5 years to find out, how many of them are going off right now that no one knows about?
Let's go to Ed in Bellingham, Washington. First-time caller. Ed, go ahead.
Hey, George, Robert.
Hey there.
I just
read something the other day that said Germany only got 10 hours of recorded sunlight last month for all their solar panels, which they've really switched a lot to in the last couple of years.
Trying to power
the whole country.
They were out of luck on that month, weren't they?
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
Too cloudy. But well, some solar panels still work with clouds, but not a lot of them.
They probably don't work too well when they're covered with snow, though.
No, that's true. Go ahead, Ed.
No, that's all I had to say, guys.
Okay,
I just want to throw that in there. So.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Ed.
Well, we haven't had much sun in the Midwest either lately.
Well, you know, it's and yet on the West Coast, we've been setting some records for heat. I think last year the West Coast was setting records for snow, and now, well, you're in L.A. It's probably mm-hmm. been warmer there than average, hasn't it?
Well, I've been away for a couple months for the holidays in frigid St. Louis, but it's been warm, but they've had these fires out here. It's been dry. It's been a mess. Then it rained. Then they got mudslides. They can't win. Marion was...
Then you get something going like in the Alps. I don't know if you heard about that one, but last week they had so much snow in the French Alps. They had the biggest snowstorms they've had in more than 30 years, and 13,000 tourists were stranded at Zermatt, which is the base.
They couldn't get down or what?
The roads were they had 20 feet of snow
stuck
or
there.
Something like that. But the roads were closed. The trains could not get through. They were bringing in helicopters. They moved 1,000 people out by helicopter. But finally, they were able to dig these like tunnels. You look on the internet and these tunnels where the train could get through, and finally the people got out. But yeah, it's funny. Time magazine just last month had an article about how the ski areas in France were all losing their snow, and now they've got the biggest snowstorm in 30 years. So, I don't know. When I see things like that, it reminds me, you know, that when we start having record cold and record snow, Now, lately, of course, they're trying to say that global warming causes record cold. I don't know how you can do that, you can say that. But, you know, like, what was it, Norfolk? It was the coldest since Chester Arthur was president.
Jeez. Can you have an ice age during a climate warming? Probably not, right?
Probably not.
Makes no sense.
Maybe it's warmer than average snow. I don't know. It makes no sense. But there are so many records that have been broken that go back to the 1800s on the amount of snow. And so those things are just things that tell me that I'm probably on the right track here.
Mary is in Wisconsin. Welcome to the show, Mary. Go ahead.
Hello, George. I think this is very important to pass on.
All right, go ahead.
10 years ago, it was in October of 2007, I filed a patent for removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. It's been used for 10 years. It's been kept quiet by the media. I believe the media is the big culprit in this. There is an article online entitled George Bush Commits to Renewable Energy for Climate Change Energy Security.
Well, tell me more about your invention, your patent. Tell me more about that for a second.
I'm sorry?
Tell me more about your patent and what happened.
Well, back in 2007, everybody was saying we're all going to burn up and die. And I thought, well, why don't they just do this? And so I watched this for a year because I said this is politics. But in the fall of 2007, it got serious for me. I thought, why doesn't somebody do something about this? So I, with my tongue in cheek, filed the patent, and it was used almost immediately.
How did it work?
It's a very simple chemical. I can take the temperature in a little room down 5 degrees from one room to the next.
And what do you do? Is it breathable?
I'm sorry?
Is it breathable?
Oh, yeah, yeah. People have been consuming it for over 100 years. And anyway, back to the article that verifies what I am saying. Ivanka, I could also send you a copy of the patent.
Yeah, I'd like to see it.
Yes, I can do that. I can't do it tonight because I got to photograph it, and then, you know, I'm not a real techie.
Okay, I get it. No scanner.
Anyway, but the fact is, it's very simple to do. It's very simple to do. But I've been watching this for 10 years. Back to the article. Bush commits to renewable energy for climate change, energy security. It's a long article, but this is the last paragraph of the article. I'm going to quote George Bush.
Just paraphrase it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to I can actually quote it. Quote, I am confident that when we look back at this period in time, we will say, how could we have doubted the capacity of mankind to develop the technologies necessary to deal with the real problems of the 21st century? And the mass media basically put a finger up at it and said, we've got different, that's my interpretation anyway. But carbon dioxide can be taken out of the atmosphere. I believe they're using it.
Well, but you got a problem with that, though, Mary. You don't want to take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere because our plants need it. Robert?
Yes, our plants need it. You know, they pump carbon dioxide into greenhouses. They, you know, greenhouses, the plants grow much better when the carbon dioxide is up around 1,000 parts per million. Submarines, our Navy, the submarines, the carbon dioxide levels in submarines is often like 5,000 parts per million. It doesn't seem to kill anybody.
No, but that's still pretty high.
Yes. Oh, it's high. But anyway, we do pump it. I mean, greenhouses, they pump it into greenhouses all the time. It helps the plants grow, and the people who work in the greenhouses apparently don't have any problems. So I just don't see CO2 as the problem that everybody's talking about.
No, but our once again, though, our plants need it. So why take it out of the atmosphere?
Right, our plants.
Then we got, then we got a problem.
It's wonderful. During the dinosaur extinction, CO2 levels were way, way, way higher, and that's probably maybe one reason why the dinosaurs were so much bigger, so many of them.
Let's go to New York. Bruce is with us now. Hi, Bruce. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi, George. It's kind of interesting, everything that's going on.
Oh, my gosh.
I got an A in earth science, but the guy in Georgia, when he's looking for the rocks, he should look for hills that are teardrop-shaped. Because that's what the glaciers do with hills, and they're all over New York State.
Huh.
Now, the one thing about this Robert mentioned is about what happened 150 years ago and stuff. But in 1660 or so, they said the sunspots stopped and thought that caused the mini ice age, but also the volcano in Iceland erupted. And that extended it for 200 years, from 1600s to the mid-1800s. So he hasn't addressed that, but what he's pointing out now is we are now entering the next 30 years as the cooling period of that 60-year cycle. And I'd like to have his opinion on that.
All right, Robert, take it away.
Absolutely. You're talking, Bruce, you're talking about the Maunder minimum, which was named after a person named Maunder who noticed that that sunspots, for about 50 years, sunspots totally disappeared. Part of the reason they were able to tell that is because Galileo had invented the telescope. But part of the situation is now that NASA is measuring sunspots, and they have the technology now to see every little tiny blemish on the sun that in the 1600s people couldn't see. And I think that there's a website, Landsite.com, but Landsite, where they keep track of sunspots as if they were looking through a telescope from the 1600s, and that's where they're really saying that we're matching that. But even NASA agrees that we are now in the lowest sunspot cycle in at least 100 years. So yes, Bruce, that sunspot cycle that you're talking about in the 1600s, the Maunder minimum, hugely, hugely important.
Robert, let's take some more final calls here. James in Kansas City, Missouri is with us now. Hey, James, get you in here. Go ahead.
Hi there, Robert and George.
Hello there.
Hi, James.
I was just calling in to comment on how cold it's been in the Midwest. Currently, it's
freezing.
It's 2 degrees.
Oh.
And 3 days, it's been below zero at night. There's been a couple days where it's been at zero. The past 3 weeks, I think it is, we've had a cold spell for like a week, and then it warms up for 2 or 3 days, and then another cold spell. And it's supposed to warm up again, I think, Thursday. It's supposed to start warming. And then more snow and rain on Sunday. I agree 100% with everything Robert said.
It's 11 degrees in St. Louis right now. Why the changing pattern so much, though, Robert?
You know, the polar vortex is taking things down. You know, just north of you, the Great Lakes, just north of James, but the Great Lakes right now, the ice coverage, I looked it up today, the Great Lakes ice coverage is 32.1%. On this date a year ago, ice coverage was only 9.9%, and on this date in 2016, it was only 6.8%. So it's not your imagination. There's stuff going on. But that's a huge amount of ice coverage based on, you know, when you compare it to the last 2 years.
Well, I think so, too. And we've got Buck in Limestone, West Virginia. Get you in here, Buck. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure thing, Buck.
I have a quick comment and a question for Robert.
Okay.
You know, we've been saying, as you know, people calling in the show has been getting colder for years. And like right now, as we speak, it's -6 in Limestone, according to my weather station.
Ouch.
School's been closed all week. Because of the cold and the snow. But I just wanted to throw a fact in there, and that is, and if people want to check it out, they can check usclimatedata.com. But anyway, last month, December 2017, our average high was 27.8, whereas the normal high for December is 42.
And
the low last month was 15.6, whereas the normal low is 26. And two things. One to ask Robert. Now, I've noticed wind speeds have picked up over the last several years.
Let's just get into that because we only got 30 seconds left, Robert. He is right. It's been very windy this year.
You know, I can't answer that one. I know that the polar vortex is apparently coming further south, and that's why you're getting all the cold. So that must have to do with the wind speed, but I'm not an expert there at all.
Okay, my friend. Robert, thanks again for being on the program. Good luck with all your work, not by fire, but by ice and magnetic reversals and evolutionary leaps. In a moment, is the Antichrist right around the corner? Oh, boy. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.